discusses different instances here. The Torah requires for a mitzvah several parts. Take for example on Sukkot, you have to set the lulav and etzvah, hadassah, and halal. The Mishnah is going to discuss what happens if you don't have all four. What if you only have the lulav and the etzvah, you don't have the hadassah and the halal? What happens if somebody has to bring a korban consisting of several animals, a series of korbanos of several animals, and he only has enough money, he can only afford two or three out of the ten that he has to bring? So do you say that either he brings all the korbanos, so he has no mitzvah at all, or do you say no, if he brings part of the korbanos, he also has a mitzvah? And so on, the Mishnah has a list of cases like this, and that's Zayinim and Aleph, and Chav Chesim and Aleph, the Mishnah discusses, we'll start from the Mishnah, and that's Chav Chesim and Aleph. The Mishnah says, Shiva kanei menorah ma'aksim zeh ezeh. In the days of Midrash in the temple, it was necessary to have a menorah. So the menorah has to have seven branches. You have three on the right side, three on the left side, and one branch in the middle. If, for some reason or another, they were unable to make all the seven branches, you have a menorah with five, or three, or six, so you don't have any mitzvah at all. It's not that you have 80% of the mitzvah. You're just missing a little bit. The Mishnah says ma'aksim zeh ezeh. You have absolutely no mitzvah whatsoever. Not only the Shiva Kane menorah, not only the seven branches of the menorah, and the oxen says there, even the Shiva Nerasera, the oxen says there. It's necessary to have the seven cups, one cup on top of each one of the branches of the menorah. And if you don't have all the seven cups, then you also don't have any mitzvah whatsoever. You have to have a full menorah. That belongs to the series of dinim that we discussed on the Akhtabadah. Now the Mishnah goes to mitzvahs that are more relevant to us. Shtei Parshia Shadim Zuzo, Ma'akvah the mezuzah. When you have a mezuzah that you have to put on the door, so the Torah says that you have to put two parshas in the mezuzah. That's why Parsha Shema, two parshas v'hayoyim shamoa. Because at the end of both Parsha Shema and parshas v'hayoyim shamoa, the concluding pasuk is of Tzavtam al mezuzah and says Tzavtam al mezuzah. So that's how we know that those two parshas from the Torah must be written in the mezuzah. What if a person has a mezuzah which only has one parsha, only Shema? It only has the Hayom Shema. He doesn't have both Shema and the Hayom Shema. So the Mishnah says that he has absolutely no mitzvah whatsoever. It's not that he has a half of the mitzvah and just missing the other half. He has no mitzvah at all. And if he says the bracha, the person says the bracha, and putting up such a mitzvah will be a bracha of Atala. And not only a bracha of Atala, that's not so bad. What's worse than that is he will never be mekayem the mitzvah of the mitzvah at all. There's no mitzvah at all if you only have one parasha without the other. Not only So the Mishnah continues to say, not only is it necessary to have the both parshias in the mezuzah, both the parsha Shema and the parshas v'hayoyim shamoa, the Mishnah adds on, afilu ktav echad miyakva. Even if one letter is missing, one ktav is missing in the whole mezuzah, you have the whole Shema, v'hayoyim shamoa is written, one aleph missing, or one nun missing or something. Even if one letter is missing, the whole mezuzah is possible, and there's absolutely no mitzvah whatsoever. You don't even have half a mitzvah. There's no kima mitzvah. And what we're going to discuss is, what is the chiddush? That if you have one letter missing, it's no good. Of course it's no good. One should have said that on his own. You're missing one letter, so you don't have the two full parshiyot. And we're going to explain what that means. Afilu ktav echad miyakva. Because the Mishnah doesn't say afilu oth acha. In Hebrew, you say a letter is an oath. So the Mishnah should say, even if one oath is missing, the whole mezuzah is proper. It doesn't say oath. It says afilu ktav echad. Even if something that has to do with the writing is missing, it's no good. What has to do with the writing? But possible that the fish. And more is going to discuss. Then the Mishnah continues to have a similar din regarding tefillah. In the mezuzah we require two parshas, because the Torah only writes in two places in the Chumash that you have to have mezuzah. The Tzavtam al mezuzah except the Sharech is only found in Parsha Shema, and in Parsha Zahayom Shema. The din of tefillah is written in four parshas, the Shema Zahayom Shema, and in addition it's found in Kadesh Vahayom Kiviyah, in Parsha Zahayom. So that's why we know that we have four parshas in the tefillah. Now what happens if somebody has a tefillin, that they're tefillin a shayyad or a shalosh, which doesn't have all the four parshiyos, it only has three, it has two, or whatever. And then the missing, in the empty box, let's say I'll put another parsha shema, I'll have two, shema, shema, and kadesh v'yoki v'yaf or something. But the Mishnah says that it's no good, you're not yoked to the mitzvah, you have to have all four parshiyos of the tefillin, otherwise you don't have the mitzvah at all. And then the Mishnah repeats again the same phrase that it wrote regarding mezuzah, written regarding tefillin, even if it's just missing one letter or one ksav, whatever that term means, we're going to explain it soon. Even if you're missing only one part of the letter, the whole pair of tefillin is also no good. You're not going to see any mitzvah whatsoever. These two sections of the Mishnah, the first piece of the Gemara we're going to leave out about the menorah, it's also relevant. Part of the menorah is also important to know, because when a shul buys a menorah, so you always have the menorah in front of the chazan. Usually the shul has a menorah in front of the chazan on the wall. But the menorah has been in here that you're not allowed to make a menorah in a shul or in a private home that's a replica that's similar to the menorah in the Beit HaMikdash. So you have to know what was necessary for the menorah in the Beit HaMikdash that we're not allowed to have in our homes. You're only committed to have the menorah in the Beit HaMikdash. So the first thing you discuss is that, the Tzelteh Dinim, the details of exactly what was necessary for menorah in the Beit HaMikdash. The more discusses that you don't necessarily have to have gold, although the Chumash says the menorah in the temple should be made from gold, that's only lechatzila. They can afford it, or if they're able to make it from gold, it's not so easy to make a menorah from gold. It's often easier to make it from other metal. If the menorah is made from other metal, it's also good, provided that you have the seven branches with the seven candles on top. So therefore, one is forbidden from making any type of a menorah with seven branches and seven candles, even if it's not made from gold. So no synagogue, or no home, no person in his private home is permitted to have a replica of the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash, even if he doesn't have a gold menorah, even if he has a metal menorah. What if he has a wooden menorah that only has that has exactly seven candles? The Gemara presents a whole shiloh about that. What's the meaning? That's a different discussion. The main theme that this parak is going to close on the next few blocks tomorrow will be concentrating on the dinim of mezuzah and the dinim of tefillin. The Mishnah closes with another din of tzitzis, which the next parak will dwell a lot upon. The Mishnah closes with the din of tzitzis. If you have a four-cornered garment, this mitzvah only applies to men. Mitzvah of tzitzis only applies to men. Mitzvah of tefillin also only applies to men. Mitzvah of mezuzah applies equally to men and women, and the din of menorah applies equally to men and to women. If a woman wants to buy, wants to purchase a menorah and keep it in her own private home, a menorah with seven branches, so this is not allowed. Whether a man or a woman wants to purchase it. So the clothing definition only applies to men. If a man wears a garment with four corners, the Torah requires putting stitches in each one of the four corners. So the Mishnah raises the question, what's the story with these four stitches? What if a person only has stitches tied on for three out of the four corners? Two out of the four corners. Would you say that he has part of the mitzvah? Or do you say that he has absolutely no part of the mitzvah whatsoever? What's the difference? What's the difference? Offhand, one could say the difference is, if I will put on a garment with four corners and only have, I have a talis that has four corners, and I only have stitches in three out of the four corners, can I say a bracha? Did you say, the Mishnah says, it's an argument among the Tanaim. That would be so, having stitches in each of the four corners of the four-cornered garment, ma'akva zu'ezu, or ma'akit each other, if you don't have all four stitches, you're not here to the mitzvah whatsoever. Why should arba asam? Because all four together constitute mitzvah achas. All four together make up one mitzvah. And that the Shmuel disagrees, that the Shmuel by Meir, the Shmuel disagrees with things, arba asam, arba mitzvah. But the four, having stitches in the four corners are four different mitzvahs. So one could have said that the difference from Allah al-Maisa would be, can a person put on a talis, a four-cornered garment? If you have a garment that only has three corners, there's no mitzvah of stitches. If you have a round garment, there's no mitzvah of stitches. The Chumash only has a mitzvah of stitches if you have a garment with four corners. So what if somebody has a bag of a talis with four corners and he only has stitches put in three out of the four corners, and there's no other talis in shul? So would you recommend that he should put on the talis and share bracha? Shekhar Hashem and Tosfon, he started the stitches, so he has at least a chasha part of the mitzvah. Or should you say no? Let him not say the bracha, let him not put on the talis because it would be a bracha of our talis. Often, one would say that that is the difference between Rabbi Shmuel and the Tanakhama, that according to the Tanakhama, that all four stitches on the oxen there, there, if you're missing chupay tzitzis in one corner, you have no mitzvah at all. And if you put on such a garment, and you say a bracha, it'll be a bracha of atollah, and you'll do an aveira by wearing such a garment. You'll be wearing a four-cornered garment without being the kind of mitzvah of having tzitzis. Whereas, according to Rabbi Shmuel, it's not so terrible. You can say a bracha, and you can wear the garment, because at least you're going to have three-quarters of the mitzvah. You have three mitzvahs, so you don't have the fourth if you have three. The Gemara doesn't want to say this difference, because even according to Rabbi Shmuel, he certainly agrees that it's a full mitzvah to wear, to have all four stitches in all four corners. But according to Rabbi Shmuel also, it wouldn't make sense if the fellow comes into shul and the last talis left in the box only has three stitches in three corners. And the fourth corner doesn't have any mitzvah, it doesn't have any stitches in it. Rabbi Shmuel would also not recommend that he should put on that talis and say, bracha shekinishanu mitzvah tzivanu lehistat of the city. It's better that he shouldn't put on any talis at all. There is no din that you have to wear a four-cornered garment. That's no din in the Torah. The din in the Torah is, if a man is wearing a four-cornered garment, then he has to put on stitches on each one of the four corners. Of course, that of a midas chassidus, Jewish people love to do mitzvahs. Oh, his mitzvahs, he's bar mitzvahs, people, the Tosik says, in Kohelet. Only his chesed, lo yuzba chesed. The people who love money are never satisfied with the amount of money that they have. They're always yearning for more money. The Gemara says, they don't amaze. The chatzi tavasa biyodo, when a person dies, he doesn't even have half the money that he's dreaming of earning. The initiational money, I wrote to Messiah, the person has $100, he wants $200. He has $1 million, he wants $2 million. He has $2 million, he wants $4 million. Everybody wants more and more and more. So the Medrash comments on that question, just like Ohev Mitzvah, Lo Yizba Mitzvah, so too, oh, just like Ohev Kesef, Lo Yizba Kesef, just like people have money, enjoy getting more money, so too, Ohev Mitzvah, the person who loves to do Mitzvah, his Neshama is never satisfied with the Mitzvah that he does. He's always, Lo Yizba Mitzvah, he always wants to do more Mitzvah. That's why Tosafot says, later on Tosafot says, another Mishnah says, that even though there is no obligation for men to wear a four-quarter garment in order to have Kesef, you're not mechuyev to wear it. If you happen to wear a garment that has four corners, then you have a mitzvah to put on tzitzis. But you're not mechuyev to go out of your way and purchase such a garment. Nevertheless, the common practice is, we have such a meaning that everybody got into the town. Even though you're not mechuyev to, we all do. And many people practice the third mitzvah chassidus that they wear an avakantis all day long. They wear a four-corner garment under their shirt all day long, and all night long, in order to gain a mitzvah all day of having tzitzis. But why is this? If you're not mechuyev to purchase a garment with four corners, just if you have such a garment, then you have to wear it. People today don't normally wear four-corner garments. So why do we go out of our way to do the mitzvah? So the Rishonim explain, because we always love to do mitzvahs, we always are eager and yearning to do additional mitzvahs. So we go out of our way to wear the four-corner garment in order to be mechuyev to do the mitzvah, and then we put on the stitches, and then we gain style. Then we get a mitzvah. But the person, let's say the case that we had before the Shabbat, then comes into shul, and the last child is left in the box, only has sisters in three corners. Doesn't have any sisters in the fourth corner. Would we recommend, according to Rabbi Shmuel, according to the Tanakhama, if he's going to put on that talis, he will have absolutely no mitzvah whatsoever. He won't gain anything. Bakir, if he'll say a bracha, he'll be a bracha of Atola. And even if he won't say a bracha, he will have an Avera. If he calls him on that, you don't wear the garment with the four corners on it, you have no chiyuv to wear sisters. Once you wear the garment with the four corners, then you have to put on sisters, and you don't have over here. But if he walks into shul on Shabbos and he's not allowed to tie any sisters in, he can't tie sisters on Shabbos. And he walks in the middle of the week and he wants to use the shul talis and he has no time to go spend a half an hour to go tie sisters in the corner. So then we would recommend Fakirat, let him deduct not put on that talis and let him avoid the whole mitzvah of sisters today. The Shaila is according to Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says, Arba Osam, Arba Mitzvah, that they're having the sisters in the four corners. Our four different mitzvahs. And if you wear a garment with three sisters and you get three mitzvahs, they're just missing one, would we recommend that he should put on the talus or not? Let him put on the talus with their bracha. So he'll gain three mitzvahs, so he won't have to put mitzvahs. But the Gemara doesn't say that that's the difference between Rabbi Shmuel and the Chachamim. Even according to Rabbi Shmuel, we would not recommend that the person put on the talus. Even if he puts on the talus and he recites the bracha, it will not be a bracha of our talus, because stuff, he's doing a mitzvah. But as long as he doesn't wear any talus at all, he's not mechuyev in any mitzvahs. Not mechuyev, so he didn't do anything wrong. Once he puts on the talus, then he's mechuyev to put on sisters in all four corners, and he doesn't have time. He doesn't have time to sit and spend half an hour to tie on the sisters in the missing corner, the fourth corner. Or at Shabbos, or Yom Kippur, he's forbidden from tying in the sisters. So, but Fakir, we would recommend that he shouldn't put on the garment. We would recommend that it's better not put on the talus at all. But once he puts on the talus, he's knocking himself, he puts himself into a situation where he's mechuyev to have sisters in all four corners, and he only has them three and he doesn't have them at all. So true, on the one hand, he's gaining three mitzvahs that he wouldn't have otherwise, but on the other hand, he's making himself mechuyev in the fourth mitzvah, which he's just not going to do. So we would recommend, according to all the Tanoim, better not put on that talus. So if so, Bezer HaBishmol, Bezer HaBonon, we recommend not to put on the talus if it only has three sisters. So what are they fighting about? A theoretical argument, theoretical machlokes. Tanoim never argued in theory. Not only didn't they argue, they never spoke in theory. The Tanoim never speak an abstract statement. They always argue halacha l'maaseh, what's the din in this case and what's the din in that case. They always have something, some theoretical principle in the back of their mind, but in the time of Tanoim, that's not the way people spoke. They spoke practical halacha l'maaseh, not kinin l'dinah. So they're not going to ask that question at the end of the Perek, and both by state and machlokes. What are they fighting about? Both of the Tanoim agree that you're supposed to have four sisters, one sister in each one of the four corners. So what's the difference when you say four mitzvahs or one mitzvah? You're still not supposed to put on the talus until you have all four.
Supposing you take a talus as you make your all the talus and sisters, and after the conflict finish, you know that you'll be a three sisters. What do you do?
You should take it off right away.
And to put on another talus to make the world, but you don't make the world.
No, you do say it, yeah. Even let's say if I'm wearing a kosher talus, let's say I put on an avakantis in the morning when I wake up, and I say bracha al mitzvah tzitzit. We make a distinction. If you put on a big talus garment, so you say bracha al hisat tzitzit. Some say it's not the bat tzitzit, some say it's not the tzitzit. Shvuah tzitzit. And if you put on a little a talus kotzit, under your shirt, the Shulchan Aruch says that you recite the bracha al mitzvah tzitzit. So let's say in the morning when I wake up, I put on the talus kotzit and I say al mitzvah tzitzit. I go to shul, let's say an hour later, and I start dining, I put on a talus gadol, so I say another girl from the Sakhbet. Let's say I'm chilling in shul, and I put on another talus, I say another girl from the Sakhbet. Only if you put on all the talasim together, then you only cover all the mitzvahs with one brach. But if you pause in between one and the other, you wait an hour or so, half an hour, 15 minutes, and you have to say another brach.
How many mitzvahs?
Yeah, each they're distinct, right, they're separate mitzvahs. They're separate
mitzvahs. Sure.
Is it a brach of the last talus? That case is certainly the show game. So the Gemara, that's the Mishnah. The Mishnah has these four sections. The first section is regarding the menorah. How do you construct, how do you make a kosher menorah in the Beis HaMikdash? And the relevance of Halacha L'maaseh, as far as we're concerned, is very significant, because whatever constitutes a kosher menorah in the Beis HaMikdash is forbidden for us to make outside of the Beis HaMikdash, both for men and for women. The Gemara says, out of Morah HaMikdash, out of respect for the Beis HaMikdash, it's not permitted to make any duplication of any of the clay hamikdash, any of the kelim that were in the Beis HaMikdash, any room. To have any room, not only in the synagogue, to have in your private home, any room that's the same size as the Beis HaMikdash. You can have a, let's say, you can make a model Beis HaMikdash with the same scale as the Beis HaMikdash. Let's say every inch represents a yard or something. Every inch represents a few amos or something. But to make a room the exact same size as any of the rooms in the Beis HaMikdash is forbidden out of respect for the Beis HaMikdash. And also the Gemara says it's not permissible to make any clay HaMikdash, to make any representation of the furniture that were in the Beis HaMikdash. So the first part of the Mishnah is discussed at length in Yeridah, in Kuf Mem Aleph, exactly what are the dimensions and what are the necessary conditions to make a kosher menorah. The men not making any menorahs in the Beis HaMikdash, but we discussed it, what is a kosher menorah, in order to know what we're not allowed to make outside of the Beis HaMikdash. The second and the third part of the Mishnah, that's what we're going to dwell on now for the next few weeks. What are the laws of mezuzah, and what are the laws of tzitzit? And then the fourth section of the Mishnah, what are the laws of tzitzit, that's going to begin the next parak. The fourth parak in the Nacha, the beginning of the parak is Hatchela. It's dedicated to all the Trapezim, all the details of mezuzah. I'd like to skip the first section of the Gemara and go to Chaf Tes Amud Aleph. And that Chaf Tes Amud Aleph, the last 10 lines on the Dalet. There's one more sheet here. It's got some Dachot Testament. I don't know, so there's 10 lines on the Dachot. The Gemara quotes the caption from the Mishnah. Shtei Parashio Shebe Mezuzah. There are two Parashios in the Mezuzah, Ma'akva Zuzu. You have a Mezuzah with Shema, without the Hayyam Shemola, the Hayyam Shemola, without Shema, it's not a Kosher Mezuzah. Ba'avilu Ksav Echad Mi'akva, even if one letter is missing, the Mezuzah is Kosher. That's the quotation from the Mishnah. So the Gemara asks, on this Mishnah, Pshita, wouldn't we have known on our own? Why does the Mishnah say, Achidish Afilu? Once you say that you have to have the both parashiyos in the mezuzah, and now she explains on the Mishnah, how do you know that they're me'akim ze'ezeh? Because it says, Nechumish, uchtatom al mezuzot. So the simple translation means, uchtatom al mezuzot, you should write these parashiyos on the mezuzah. Al mezuzot, zikfech obisharech. The word mezuzot, in Yiddish, in common usage, we call the little parasha the mezuzah. That's not really what the word means in the Chumash. In Chumash, in biblical usage, the word mezuzah means the door post. The Torah says you should write the parasha of Shema, B'Hayam Shemoa, on the mezuzah, on the door post. Doesn't mean you write it on the door post, it means you write it on a piece of parchment, and you attach that piece of parchment to the door post. But the word mezuzah in the Chumash means the door post. It says when they brought the Korban Pesach in Egypt, so they sprinkled the blood, Ashtei HaMizuzot V'yala Mashkot. Doesn't mean they split them, the one or two mezuzahs on both sides of the door. These are two door posts, and on the post on top, and the whole surah is up there. So Rashi comments on the mission, this is like the Gemara. The pasuk is, the simple pshat in the pasuk is, Uchtatom HaMizuzot V'yitzech V'sharecho, you should write these things, Uchtatom, you should write these things, the two parashas of Shema V'Hoyam Shemoa, on the parchment and nail it onto the mezuzah. That's the simple translation. The Gemara has another level of interpretation on the pasuk, a level of drash, where they dash in the word of stav tom in the sense of ksivotama, that you should write a perfect stav, that you shouldn't do a poor job in the writing. What do you mean it should be a ksiva tam or a ksiva bishlaimutza, a perfect staff? The Gemara has several dinim based on these roshes. One of these dinim is a ksiva tam or implies you should have every letter of the two parshas. You have to have both shema, b'hoyon, shemoa, and you can't be missing any words or any letters. If you're missing something, so it's not a ksiva tam, it's not a full ksiva bishlaimutza. So the Gemara asks right away on the Mishnah. Once the Mishnah says that the two parshas are makhti zu and zu, that you have to write both Shema v'Harem Shemo. How do you know you have to write both? Because it says Uchtav Tom, and the connotation of Uchtav Tom, according to the Drosh of Chazal, is Ksiva Tamo, a Ksiva Bishlei Musa, full Ksiva. So if you need a full Ksiva, so of course we will know on our own that if one letter is missing, it's no good. So what does the Mishnah write a further Kiddush? A Ksiva Uchtav Echad Miyaksin, even if one letter is missing. The whole Mizuz is no good. Taking Marakash of Shita, of course it's no good. If you're missing one letter, it's also not called Ksiva Tamo. And so the Gemara, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, the Rav interprets that what the Mishnah means to say is the following. But Nitzucha Elo, Lakusa Shal Yud. What the Mishnah means to say is like this. I have Shema V'Hayom Shema written perfectly. And I'm not missing any letters at all. And the Mishnah didn't say, I feel O Sachas Miyakev. Doesn't say you're missing a letter. You're not missing any letter. You're missing a section of a letter. You have the letter, let's say you have the letter Yud. And the letter Yud is, you know what a Yud looks like in the Torah, in the written Hebrew. So what if you have the letter Yud, but it's just missing one of the points in the quarter. It's just missing a kut, which is a point in one of the corners. So one might have thought that basically you have the letter, just that you're missing a section of a letter. One could think that that's only lachatzimah, but that's not miyakid to the Yevon. She's going to tell me the whole mezuzah is no good. Because you're just missing a kut to shal Yud, a point in the corner of the Yud. So the Mishnah comes to tell me, I feel Ksabeth, but even a section of a letter, if it's missing, all the possible the whole mezuzah, you have no mitzvah, you're missing the mitzvah mezuzah, and the bracha that you recite is a bracha of Atzot. That's what the Gemara has it in, Kut to Shal Yud. What exactly is the Kut to Shal Yud? Here there's a big argument among the Mepharshim. Rashi says that Kut to Shal Yud means the bottom point on the right-hand side of the Yud. Without which, you would just have a box. You would just have a square box. If you don't have the bottom point on the right-hand side, you don't have any yud. That's how Rashi translates in the Gemara. So he says, ask on Rashi, here is the country's the regular Yemini. If you're missing the points on the bottom of the right-hand side, that's called good to show you. So basically, you have the letter, you're just missing a section of the letter. So he says, that cannot be. What do you mean? If you just have a box and you don't have the points on the bottom of the right-hand side, so that's a box, that's a dot, it's not a yud. This is not a letter yud. So why does the Gemara say, oh, that's what the Mishnah means. Basically, you have the letter, you're just missing a section of the letter. No, for example, if you're missing the whole letter, instead of the letter aleph, you have a dot. And that's not a letter aleph. Instead of the letter yud, you have a dot. That's no good. You have to have a yud. If you're missing the bottom section of the yud, you don't even have the surah, so it doesn't even look like a yud at all. So the Rabbi Natan, and the Torah Rabbi Natan, that it means a different shell. The Kut to Shal Yud does not refer to the bottom section on the right-hand side of the Yud. If that's missing, you don't have a Tzuras HaOth at all. Not that you're just missing a section of a letter, you don't even have a Yud at all. What it refers to is, Kut to Shal Yud refers to the point on the left-hand side of the Yud. Which point is it on the left-hand side of the Yud? So here, there are two versions of what the Rabbi Natan said. That it refers to the point on the top, and the top on the left-hand side. That's where we make a Yud, like this. You have a point on the top of the left-hand side, and the point on the bottom of the right-hand side. So the point on the bottom of the right-hand side, that Rabbi Natan argues with Rashi, that's not a section of the letter. If you don't have that, you don't even have a yud at all. You're missing an actual part of the surah. But what the Gemara is referring to is, the surah to show you the top part on the left-hand side. All the Rishonim have the Rabbi Natan with a different version. Just like if you're missing the point on the bottom of the right-hand side, and you argue with Rashi and says you're missing the whole letter, so if you're missing the top on the left-hand side, you're also missing the whole surah Torah. What the Gemara is referring to is good to show you the bottom on the left-hand side. The bottom on the left-hand side. See, when we make our yud, when we print the yud, when you write it, they tell you write it differently. But when we in school, let's say, when we teach students to make a letter yud, we usually make it round on the bottom. You have a point on the top of the left-hand side, point on the bottom of the right-hand side, and the bottom of the left-hand side is round. So the din is, the Rabbi Natan says that that's for safety. So writing on the blackboard is okay. For writing in Shiva Stan is okay. But for writing in the third fill in the mezuzah, it's not okay. The Rabbi Natan says that that's what we refer to by Kutu Shal Yud, means the point on the bottom of the left-hand side. The point on the bottom of the left-hand side. It doesn't mean it has to hang out a lot. Like on the bottom of the right-hand side, it has to jut out a little bit. It has to stick down. On the top of the left-hand side, it has to also stick up a little bit. On the bottom of the left-hand side, it doesn't necessarily mean it has to hang down a little bit, like a leg. Otherwise, parquet, it won't look like a yud.
Like a rope.
It won't look like a yud at all. It means you should come to a very sharp point, that you should see that there's a sharp point over there. It shouldn't be round. It shouldn't look like it's round. It has to come to a very sharp point. These are the three pshatim that the Rishonim have in the Kusha Shoyud. Rashi says Kusha Shoyud refers to the left, to the leg, on the bottom of the right-hand side of the yud. And that's what the Gemara says, that that's what the Chiddush is over here. That even though basically you really have a yud, if you have your dot, you really have a yud, but it's missing a part of the yud if you don't have the leg on the right-hand side. That's how Rashi learns it along. Taisa says that's wrong, that doesn't make any sense, because if you don't have the leg sticking down on the right-hand side of the yud, absolutely doesn't look like a yud. It looks like a drop of ink. Looks like a dot. There's no tzuras ha'os at all. It's not that you're missing a section of the letter. You're missing the whole letter. The whole tzuras ha'os is missing. So the Rabbi Natan disagreed with Rashi. And he said the truth to show yud is something on the left-hand side. But within the Rabbi Natan, you have two versions. What part of the yud on the left-hand side are we referring to? The one version is that the Rabbi Natan distinguishes between the bottom kutz that sticks out on the right-hand side, that's essential, that's an integral part of the tzuras ha'os, as opposed to the tag, you might call it, as opposed to the little point that sticks up on the left-hand side of the yud, that's to the chapter to the letter. The letter really has the tzuras ha'os without that kutz shel yud, but the din says that it's not kibbutz yet. You don't have that part sticking on the right on the left-hand side, it is a yud, but it's not a kosher ha'os. And the Rush quotes the other, there are two versions that have been found. The other version of Abinatam is no. Just like Rashi is wrong, that's also wrong. Just like the bottom leg that's still set on the right-hand side is an integral part of the suicide. And if you're missing that, you just don't have a yud at all. It's not that you have a yud that's missing a hechsher. You're missing an hechsher. So if you're missing the coat, the tag on the top of the left-hand side, you don't have a suicide at all. But the Abinatam enter the Gemara. That's how we're machmir. We're machmir for all three. You got to have the bottom on the right-hand side, the top on the left-hand side. And you must have the bottom, a sharp point in the corner on the bottom of the left-hand side. That's the third shot. The second version of Abinatam is, the Kutsu Shal Yud refers to the sharp corner on the bottom of the left-hand side. There's a famous story in our scholar literature, in our killing, and when they started attacking the Rabbanim in Europe, and then to the whole story, the way a man was divorcing his wife, and the man's name was Hillel. And Hillel, the husband, was an Amhoris, so he didn't know that the correct spelling of Hillel was Hey Lamed Lamed. So this Amhoris used to spell his name Hey Yud Lamed Lamed. Hillel. Hey Yud Lamed Lamed. So the deal is that if a person spells his name wrong, when you write it super dead, you don't write it according to the way the Meshuggah spells his name. You write it according to the way it's supposed to be spelled correctly. However, in Tanakh, there is a passage in the Rayonim they quote that the name Hillel is sometimes spelled Hey Yud Lamed Lamed. So it's a legitimate spelling. So we have two spellings. Hey Lamed Lamed for people who know Talmud, and then there is a Hillel whose name appears so often in the Talmud. Hillel and Shammai. Hillel's name is always spelled Hey Lamed Lamed. And there is a biblical figure whose name, he wasn't an Amoris. That's the way he spelled his name. Hey Yud Lamed Lamed. So if anybody happens to spell his name, he personally spells Hey Yud Lamed Lamed, even though he's an Amoris and he doesn't know that there's a person good idea. He thinks that he spells it the same way everybody else in the world does. And but he doesn't. He spells Hey Yud Lamed Lamed. It really requires that's how you have to write it. And that's how you have to write in the gate. So one of the Maskilim wrote out a famous story where the man was getting divorced and the Rav asked him what's his name, Dr. Hillel, and he said, how do you spell it? Dr. Hayyud Lamed Lamed. So the Rav says, okay, the Sefer has to write it the way the Amoris of the husband spells it, Hayyud Lamed Lamed. So the Sefer wrote it like that and it left out the good to show you the Rav in the time, Kumra, Gabi Kumra. He had the bottom on the right hand side, he had the top on the left hand side, just didn't have the sharp corner on the bottom of the left hand side. And the name Hillel was spelled, when you write it again, the name appears more than once. So once the name Hillel was written and the yud was round on the bottom of the left-hand side. And then the husband gave the get and he went away to America, whatever. He left Europe, he went to America, goodbye Charlie. And then the next day they realized that the get was possible because it didn't have the good to yud. So this, the master writes the whole story where the rabbi discusses that the aguna has to remain an aguna for the rest of her life because of the possible get. So he writes the whole story, the title of the story is good to show yud. It's all based on Mitzvah Ben-Tam. Because of the Kutsu Shal Yud, it's possible, and it's not even a mezuzah, it's not a mezuzah, it's like a Torah filler. It's only a get basically to write in other languages also. We have a minute to write the get in Sava Shuri. We have a minute to write the get in a script which is approximately identical to the Sava Shuri. It's not exactly the same as the Sava Shuri, but approximately identical. So this master wrote a whole attack against the Rabbonim. Why they're mocking so much of Chumra, Gabi Chumra, to make a woman an Aguna to this ridiculous Amoris that didn't know how to spell his name and you don't even need the Yud at all. And he left out the Kutra Shuri. That's the famous, this Rabbi Tam's a famous
Was it
sometimes yes and sometimes no. I don't think that the din would be so on that thing. I don't think so. There are a lot of din in Lachatila, there are a lot of details how to spell names. But the other, there are a lot of kubis. Even if you write the name in Gansan wrong, a lot of times we are not sure. Yeah. But sometimes it depends how wrong. Look at it. The woman's name is Sorin, you write Rochel. If the name is Azron and you write Hilo, this I did one I use, then it's no good. But if it's a slight error, I don't think we would pass it. And then Gitakta might, they wanted to attack the Rabbonim, so they wrote a whole story the way they made a Chumrah, Gadi Chumrah, Gadi Chumrah, things that didn't make sense. They make, look, he attacks the Rabbonim, look, and makes the woman an Aguna for no good purpose whatsoever. There is a big difference over here, Halacha L'maisa, between Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam. It's important to keep this in mind. You have a din when you write a mezuzah, or you write tefillin, it's different from writing a Sefer Torah. When you write a Sefer Torah, you don't have to write everything in order. For inspiration, then Borah, then Elohim. You don't have to write for inspiration, then Borah, then Lechlecha Bayir. You can write it out of order also. Let's say I have a tikkun. I know I have a picture of the Sefer Torah. I'm going to make an exact copy of that Sefer Torah. So I can write any column I want first, as long as later on everything goes in the right order. I don't have to do the Ksivut Kesidron. I don't have to write first the first column and the second column. If it turns out easier for me to write backwards, I can write backwards also. In Tefillin and Mezuzah, there is a specific din that it must be written to Sidra. All the letters have to be written in the proper order. First Shema, Yisrael, Hashem, 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 Echor. And if you finish writing the whole Mezuzah, you realize you left out a letter or something. So the only way to make it, you can't just add on a letter later on. The only way to make it kosher is to erase everything from that point on. And then to rewrite everything so that everything is written in the proper order. And if you have some Shema, Shema, Hashem, in the section that you have to erase, that you're not permitted to erase Shema, Hashem. So far, you have to put this in Gedikin, you have to put it in the shame, and start writing your mezuzah, you're filling all over. This is only a din, it's filling a mezuzah. And say the Torah, there is no such requirement that you say the Torah must be written Kisidron in the proper order. You can write it in any order, as long as the finished product is in order. You can't have a say the Torah that has the Bereshit in the end and the in the beginning. You have to sew it up right. The finished product has to be in order. But it doesn't necessarily have to be written in order. Some of Farshim say that the reasons, you don't really have to have any reasons for the din, it's learned that from Sukkim. But some explain the reasons for the din. It's very simple. That when Yitzim Torah Malachi Ashari, if it says the Torah is only kosher, if everything is written in order, it would be highly improbable ever to get one kosher Sefer Torah in the world. Be it of Gemot, how is it possible that a Sefer should write a Sefer Torah from beginning to the end and not make any mistakes that he should have to go back? Any time he makes a mistake, he has to erase everything from there. What if he thought that he did everything right, and then he finishes till the end, and then he has another study checking, he finds he made a mistake in Parish Inspiration. So far from, you have to start all over again. You can never fix anything. So in Tefillin and Mezuzah, it's only two parashiyos from Mezuzah, it's only four parashiyos from Tefillin. So that's not so impossible. But there, the Torah is a din where you require Sefer Kisidra. But in Sefer Torah, it's practically impossible. It's practically impossible. That's why the Halacha doesn't have such a din. Megillah doesn't have to be Kisidra. Yeah, it's only a special din in Tefillin and Mezuzah. Some Rishonim have a Chiddush, however, a very interesting Chiddush, the Ritvo writes in the Shulchan Ritvo, that not only Tefillin and Mezuzah meet Sefer Kisidron, the four parshiyos of Tefillin must be written Kisidron even when you write the Sefer Torah. Let's say you have a Sefer Torah, and you find a mistake in the middle of Parsha Shema, B'Hayah, Shemaya, Kadesh, or B'Hayah, Kiriyah. Offhand, we would say, just look in the Yeridah, in Shulchan Aruch, you would say that to get a Sefer and let him correct it. It's not a Tefillin, it's not a Mezuzah. The only time you need to see with these Sidra is in Tefillin and Mezuzah. So the Ritva writes the Chiddush, and the truth is that it's no good. That even these four parashiyos of Tefillin, when they're written in Sefer Torah, they're called parashiyos of Tefillin, and parashiyos of Tefillin need to Sidra. Not only Tefillin, not only the Hechsher HaTefillin or Hechsher HaMezuzah, do you require to see with Sidra, the parashiyos of Tefillin or the parashiyos of Mezuzah, even when you appear in the Sefer Torah, must be written to Sidra. And if you have a mistake in Shema, you would have to erase the whole thing and rewrite it. You can't erase the Shemit Hashem. You have to cut it out. You have to cut out that section from the cloth, from the parchment, and sew in a different section of cloth and rewrite the whole parashat. That's a chiddush at the mitzvot. Every day they don't quote this mitzvah. No, just that parsha. The four parshas, Shema v'Hayom Tiviyacha, Kadesh, Shema v'Hayom Shema, Kadesh v'Hayom Tiviyacha. The parshas of Tzilin, we consider even when they appear in the second third. That's what the mitzvah.
I have a question. Suppose that if a third was lost and they found a complete parsha, two parshas that are equal in this week,
no, the Gemara says that ought to be, you should be allowed to do it. You should have been allowed to do it.
No, you just stated that it must be, since I apply all the different, that we should be able to use it as a mezuzah.
You should have been able, right. You should have been able to use it as a mezuzah. However, the Gemara has one ma'akid, one hitch. The Gemara says we have a principle of malam ha'kodesh v'lo morid. It is something originally served the purpose of the kedusha hamura, namely that the Torah has more kedusha than sin. But they serve more kedusha than mezuzah. So something, if one section of cloth serves the function of being part of the Sefer Torah, if you'll now cut out, let's say the whole Sefer Torah is now possible. You just have these parshas are so cautious, they are not worn out. The rest of the Sefer Torah is worn out, and these parshas are not worn out. So the Gemara says later on, Sakha is going to be in the office. The Gemara says it's forbidden to use those parshas to fill in from mezuzah, because that would constitute a violation of Malam Makodesh Shalom Arim. You're using something that originally was designated for Kedusha Hamura, and now you're going to use it for Kedusha Kala. Not only that, the Gemara even says, let's say have a Shal Rosh and a Shal Yad. So the Gemara says the Shal Rosh and the Shal Yad have the same four parshiyas in them, have the identical same four parshiyas. Kadesh Moya Kedi Akashma Vahayam Shemaya. So the Gemara says, what if you have a Shal Rosh that you used to use a Shal Rosh now? Now you don't need it anymore. I have a new pair of spoons. The Gemara says it's not allowed to take the parshiyas from the Shal Rosh and put them into a Shal Yad now, because a Shal Yad has a slightly lower Kedusha than a Shal Rosh. And this would also constitute a violation of Malam HaKodesh for Lomari. Other dinim like that also, yeah. The Machlokes, let's say, Tefillin and Mezuzah. And the Machlokes in Poskim, Ashayim, and Yeruday. Which has more Kedusha, Tefillin or Mezuzah? Let's say something was originally written for Tefillin, are you allowed to use it for Mezuzah? Something was originally written for Mezuzah, are you permitted to use it for Tefillin? Which direction would you say Malam HaKodesh? If you wrote it for the lower Kedusha, you're permitted to use it for the higher Kedusha. But if it's written for the higher Kedusha, then you may not use it for the lower Kedusha because there's a Mori. Not permitted to be married anything from the Kedusha.
Should it come in the category of
Mitzvah Tzvichot Kavonah? Mitzvah Tzvichot Kavonah is Shema. That's what you mean.
Yeah, I mean...
Mitzvah Tzvichot Kavonah really is, that's a different topic. Mitzvah Tzvichot Kavonah means when you're Mekayim in Mitzvah. When I wear the tefillin, do I have to have in mind that I'm doing it to Shem Mitzvah? Or even if I just try it on to see how the tefillin are going to fit, let's say I just try on a pair of tefillin to see if the ritzua is the right size. So do you have to say a bracha when you put it on or not? You're not interested in being going to the mitzvah. Are you going to the mitzvah without thinking about the mitzvah? And you're thinking about something else. So that's a machlokes when the mitzvah is a kavanah. Kavanah lost faith, the mitzvah is the same as kavanah. You need to quote a different thing, that you need to see the lishma. When you write, that's what you mean. When you write the tefillin, you have to see the lishma. When you write it, you have to see the lishma. So how can you use, let's say, a Sefer Torah that's written Hashem Sefer Torah, wasn't written Hashem Mezuzah? Why does the Gemara say that the reason why you're not allowed to switch it from Sefer Torah to Tefillin is because Malam HaKodesh Olam Arim, let the Gemara say a better reason, that you need to see the Lishma for Tefillin, you don't have the Lishma. So that's what the Beit Yosef asked the Beit Kashin and Hilchot Tefillin, and he answers that you see from that Gemara Chiddush, that if you have Lishma for the highest level of Kedusha, Yesh Bechlal Masayim on it, and it's considered is this that was good for the Shema, even for filling up from the Mezuzah. Because it says, Achidish Din Allah, and Shulchan Aruch, it says, you have to do Yivud Ha'or, the Shema. You have to take the hide of the animal, and treat it with chemicals, however they treat it chemically, to make it into parchment, the Yivud must be done with Shema. Man, it must be done by a goat. It must be done by a girl who is by mitzvah. Has to be done by a man who's mechuyev in tefillin. A woman is not mechuyev in the mitzvah of tefillin. Even if they want to volunteer to wear tefillin, good thing. But since she's not mechuyev in the mitzvah, so the din says that women cannot create the shema. Only one is mechuyev in the mitzvah can create the shema. They can put on tefillin, but they may not write the tefillin. Or they may not make the ibud. They may not prepare the tefillin. They can do any mitzvah that they're focused on the making. That's a machlokes hakana, where the women are permitted to do a mitzvah that they're focused on. And we passed in the Shulchan Aruch that they met. The only further issue that's left as a machlokes in the Tumen Hagen is when a woman, let's say, sits in Sukkah, or when a woman shakes a little bit in the Esrig, does she recite the bracha? Can she really say, Asher Kedushanu ben Mitzvot Zid Tivonu? The Tivonu means that God obligated us to do this, and she didn't obligate the women to do that mitzvah. They volunteered if they wanted. But this is a major machlokes among the Rishon. So in Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber of Yosef Karo presents the sheet of the Chachmi Tzvorah, that a woman may not decide to offer on a mitzvah that she's talking from. She may volunteer the mitzvah, she gets tzar, but she may not say the bracha of the tzivon because it's not true. It's a and that's diminished by many tzvarim. Since by most tzvarim they follow the tzav of the Mechaber. And in fact, Rav Avadi Yosef has a tshuva about that. He says that those who are tzvarim, he says those who are tzvarim must follow the tzav of the Mechaber, that the women should not say the bracha that says tzav. And the Ramon in Shulchan Aruch presents the tzak of the Balei Hapesed, the tzak of the Raizit against the Rambam, the Shita that we follow, the Ashkenaz will follow that, that the women may recite a bracha even on the Sukkot of Shev Mandra. It's not a question of chauvinism. It's a question, can you say the Tivon? Because we can show you. Here, the Beit Yosef asks this kasha that you ask. Beit Yosef asks that kasha that how can the Gemara say that if not for the Deen of Mal Makadish Olam Alivi, one would be permitted to use the parashia Shema V'Hayam Shemaichem in all Sefer Torah Shagola, in all Sefer Torah that's all Sivisim, and it's a shame. If you could take out the parashia Shema V'Hayam Shema and use it from the Luzer, or use it for Tzil, it's not for the fact that there's a din of Ma'al Makadosh Olam Arim. In fact, the Akasha, the unique Sivu Lishma, the Torah was written for Sefer Torah, wasn't written for Shem Tzil, wasn't written for Shem Luzer. So he answers this parashia, that Yesh Bechlam Masai Mona, that since the Kedusha of the Sefer Torah is higher than the Kedusha, it's above the Kedusha of Tzil and the Luzer, if you wrote the Shem Kedusha, say the Torah is considered that it has Lishma for anything below it. That would include the Mezuzah and Tzil. And that's what the meaning by the Sofrim is. The meaning by the Sofrim is that when they do the Ibud Haflah, when they take the hide of the animal and they treat it chemically, and they convert it into parchment to write on it, so the Ibud must be done Lishma. How is the fellow who does the Ibud, how is he going to know which parchment is going to be used for, say, the Torah, which is going to be used for Tzil, which is going to be used for Mezuzah? He has to keep three different vats. He has to keep one vat, he throws in the chemical there, the Shem Kedusha, say the third. And another vat, the Shem Kedusha, Tzilin. The third vat, he throws in the chemicals with the Sahar, the Shem Kedusha, Mezuzah. It's too complicated. So in Shulchan Aruch, they recommend just do everything the Shem Kedusha, say the third, which is the highest level of Kedusha. And Yesh B'chal Masai Manas, if you want to switch it and use the cloth for Tzilin or for Mezuzah, which is a lower level of Kedusha, say the third, it's okay, everything is covered.
What about the Kedusha of Mezuzah?
Shamus. Right.
And now you
want
to make
it. Yes. Yeah. So well, I would have said that that's a Malus. I would have said you're Malus. You're pulling it out of the Shamus and using it. The Gemara says no. The Brisa says no. But since it was originally intended to say the service, you're not allowed to use it. We have that din in the shul also. Halacha Maaseh, we have the Mishnah Berurah has this din in the shul. Let's say the men's section and the women's section have different degrees of Kedusha in the shul. Because in the Beit HaMikdash, the men's section and the women's section are different. In the Azorah, in the Azorah proper of the Beit HaMikdash, one is not permitted to sit. So the men, if they're interested in coming to the Beit HaMikdash, let them sit. If they want to sit, let them not come to the Beit HaMikdash. So the men's section of the Beit HaMikdash, the Ezra Sisrael, the Azorah, had a Kedusha Azorah there. These are the chef's korbanos, and nobody was allowed to sit. Gemara had to din any yeshiva by Azorah, and the Malchay Beit HaMikdash is alive. The only one who's permitted to sit in the Beit HaMikdash proper is David HaMelech. David HaMelech didn't have any Azorah. Shlomo HaMelech filled the Beit HaMikdash. Maybe the descendants, the Malchay Beit David, the Malchay Beit David are allowed to sit in the Beit HaMikdash. Gemara derived this from the Pesach of Yisrael. Ayesha HaMelech HaKifi Hashem, and he sat in the Azor. Otherwise, no one is allowed to sit in the Azor. So the women, they felt that it's too much to require of them that if they want to visit the Beit HaMikdash, they have to stay in. The men, let them stay in. If they don't want to stay in, let them not come. But for the women, they felt that they should give the women a break. So they were never Makadish. Maybe the women would have been happier the other way. I don't know. But the Talmud tells us, the Mishnah tells us, that the women's section of the Beit HaMikdash did not have the Kedusha of Azariah. It had a slightly lower level of Kedusha. It only had Kedusha of Harabayim. There were three levels, three basic levels of Kedusha of the Beit HaMikdash. You have the Azariah proper, that's the actual Beit HaMikdash itself, where the Shech the Kodbanim, and the Yitzhak Kodshim, Kodoshim, and so on. But they do all the Avodas HaKavod. Then you have the Harabayim that surrounds the Azariah. Then you have Yerushalayim, where you eat Kodshim Kalim, where you eat Mitzvah Shenis. That's the lower level. That's the third level of Kedusha of HaMikdash. It's also a level of Kedusha of HaMikdash, but it's a lower level. So just like in the Beit HaMikdash in the temple, the women's section, the Ezras Nashim, was learning Kaddish to Kedusha of HaZor. That's when the Mishnah says the women were always permitted to speak on Shir, because it wasn't part of the actual HaZor. So too the Pasuk say that when you construct a shul, the section where the men sit is parallel to the men's section in the Beit HaMikdash, and it has more of a Kedusha space at night. And the women's section in the shul has a lower level of Kedusha space at night. Just like in the Beit HaMikdash, the women's section was a lower level of a secondary degree. By us in the shul, it doesn't make any difference to start sitting because the men can sit in the men's section just like the women may sit in the women's section. but it has a slightly lower level of kedusha. So the Mishnah Berurah, the Chafetz Chaim, right? The Mishnah Berurah, that's the Maaseh. Let's say you have a shul like this, the men's section here, the women's section over there. Let's say some like Yom Tov, a Shabbat, a Bar Mitzvah, whatever. There are a lot of women, and there aren't that many men. And you're interested in moving over to Mechitza, in order to have a few more pews, a few more chairs included in the women's section, the Shabbat is temporarily not in the men's section. So the Chafetz Chaim says that that's not allowed. He quotes the earlier question, that's not allowed. That constitutes a violation of Malim Matot. They do it all over. They do it in Yeshiva. They do it in all Yeshiva. So they have portable Mechitza. If you have a Mechitza that's nailed down, no Shabbat. They have no prayer. If you have a portable Mechitza, so they do it all over to accommodate more people over here, they move the Mechitza there, more people over there, move it over there. But the Mishnah Berurah says in one direction you can do it. You can move the Mechitza into the women's section to get more seats for the men. But it says, you're not allowed to move it into the men's section, to use part of the men's section for the women's section. He says that this is the Nisa Deraisa. He says that this constitutes the Nisa Deraisa to move over the Mechitza. Because Kedusha is Beis HaKnesses, it goes to Yerayim and the Chaliyodim passing like that. The Kedusha is Beis HaKnesses, the Kedusha Deraisa. The Machloek is our person of the Kedusha is Beis HaKnesses, the Kedusha Deraisa, the Kedusha Derabonim. Because the Novi refers to Beis HaKnesses as a Mikdash Miyad. It's a miniature Beis HaMikdash. It has a lower level of Inyani Beis HaMikdash. But it's very different from the Beis HaMikdash. And that's a shaila. If you call it a Mikdash Miyah, does that mean that it's only an imitation Beis HaMikdash? And on a level of the right, it doesn't have any Kedusha at all. It just has a make-believe Kedusha of the Rabban. Or you say, no, it has a real Kedusha Beis HaKnesses in the right, a Mikdash Miyah.